I've been told many times, shouldn't be sharing your story. It should be behind. Yeah. Yes. It's something that should be left behind closed doors. It's nobody needs to know about it. And that's going back to, remember back in the olden days where it's like everything was behind closed doors. It's nobody's business. Mm-hmm. So you still have that in today's society where, no, we don't need to share it. And you're having, you know, one woman a week being killed. We've had, I think, two already this year that have already been murdered due to domestic violence.
Hello and welcome back to the first new episode of Secrets in the City, where we turn stories of our past into life-changing lessons. You might be wondering, why has there been such a delay between the last episode and this episode? And I'm going to do a whole other podcast about that. Not a totally new podcast. It's going to be on this podcast talking about, you know, why I took that long break. And I'm hoping by sharing my story, it might help you if you're going through the same thing. Now, today's guest, before I get into her introduction, please note that we will be speaking about domestic abuse. So just use caution. And also, if there's any little ears running around, maybe just use your AirPods or whatever they're called nowadays. There's so many different styles, aren't there? All right. Today's guest, Cherie. I actually met her in the office that I'm sitting in right now, in these exact chairs. I'd heard about her story. So I think I had this preconceived notion of what I was going to expect. But I was totally surprised. There's this bubbly, radiant, positive woman that just comes bounding into this office with a massive smile on her face. She was giggly, she was radiant, and you know what? She was even just a little bit cheeky now and again. And that's why I wanted to get her in and really share the nooks and crannies of her story, because yes, she is a survivor of domestic abuse. She's gone through things that no one should have to go through. But I think there's a more important story there, and really what I think is her superpower, her ability to regrow her mindset. And she speaks about that during the episode. She speaks about the fact that she worked with a therapist, and the therapist said, you know, we have to actually retrain your brain to think in a completely new way. And her stories and also her tips of how she did that, I think, is what I would love for you to focus on in this episode. Now, a bit more about Cherie, and I'm going to put all this in the show notes. She is an advocate, a tireless advocate. She is a speaker, but she's also an author of this book called, I'm just going to read my notes so I don't get this wrong, Love, Bruises, and Bullshit, a compilation of the life stories of over 20 women's survival. I think the conclusion and what really I got out of this was that Cherie's story is really a reminder that no one should have to suffer with what they've gone through alone in their head. So without further ado, I hope you enjoy this episode and I hope you learn as much as I did from this episode. Let's get started.
Cherie, thank you for being here. Let's open it up by sharing, what secret do you pick and why did it resonate with you?
Yeah, so I guess the secret that I picked would be the one about, you know, not leaving because of your children. Actually, I don't even know if that is one. I can't remember the question correctly, but it was the one about, you know, staying in the relationship and for the children. I guess that was kind of my big secret, where even though I guess my relationship, I knew it wasn't a good one, I just sort of stayed for my children. And another secret, I'm going to give you another secret.
Ooh, is, two for the price of one.
Yes. I guess it's a sad one. I've actually not really shared it with anybody. Was when I fell pregnant with my second child, I did have some people ask me why I had my second child after, you know, being in that relationship and having my daughter. And it was maybe a selfish reason. I'm not sure. I don't regret having him at all, but it was, I had him so my daughter and my son would have each other, you know, because.
I'm going to start crying. Yeah.
Just because that relationship, you know, I never knew if that day would be my last day. Do you know what I mean? Like, I didn't know how extreme and how bad the violence could get and stuff like that. So I always thought if something happened to me, at least my children would have each other. So at least my daughter would have a brother that they could go through, I guess, things and hard times together. And it is sad, but I love both of my children, but it's definitely something I've never really shared. When people have asked, you know, why did you have your second child?
There is so much impact there. But the first thing that came in my mind is how beautiful.
Yeah.
How beautiful. And I guess my first question is, was it something along the lines of you felt quite alone then and you didn't
definitely want to pass that on? Definitely. Because I grew up, I have a lot of siblings, but.
How many?
Okay, so this, you're going to laugh at this. So I actually have 6 sisters and 4 brothers, but I am the only child between my parents. So even though I have all of these siblings, I don't have a full blooded sibling, I guess,
right.
To say.
So they're all half.
So they're all half, yeah. And then every other sibling I have has another full-blooded sibling. So wow. I did feel alone at times, you know, like I would go away with – so I grew up with my mum and I lived with my mum and had my siblings. So it was a very energetic, you know, lots of us in there. And then my dad moved on and got married and had other kids. So I would go away with a brother and sister from my dad's side and we'd fly overseas to see him and we'd come home and then they would go home with their mum and then I'd have to find my own way home. I mean, I'm older than them. So it was just that whole you spend time and then you just split. Do you know what I mean? So I didn't have that my sibling with me constantly, I guess. It's so weird, but I didn't want my children to go through that.
I absolutely get it. It yeah. almost sounds like you were a puppy left by the side of the road.
Yeah.
Just had to make their way back.
Yeah.
Like that's you.
Yeah.
Wow. Definitely. That would have been hard from the get-go.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. So lots of siblings. Now, getting back to the whole secret, and I mean, most people take a while to reveal theirs. So it sounds to me that you've embodied your story, you've learned from it already.
Yes.
And it sounds to me that you're in that process of passing on knowledge.
Yes.
But let's, if we can crack open a bit more about those hard times, if you're willing.
Definitely. What would you like to know?
Tell me about the relationship. And how did you meet? And because I think here's the thing. My partner, he was actually my first guest on this podcast, and he cried when he spoke about his mom and his mom who went through severe domestic violence. I mean, to the point that he was a little boy and he knew where the gun was in the house and he knew how to put it together. And he knew that if he shot his father, he wouldn't go to jail because he was just a kid. I mean, this is 7 or 8 years old.
Yeah.
Already thinking that way.
Yeah.
And I only learned about these kind of intricacies of domestic violence through him, but there's still so much that I and I think the audience don't understand because from the biased perspective, you think, I don't get it.
Yeah.
Why would you let someone treat you that way?
Yes.
There's still that bias. Would you agree with that?
100%. Mm. I got goosebumps actually just when you said that. It is... Definitely. And the thing with domestic violence, though, it is also such a taboo subject and there's not enough being said about it. And unfortunately, if you haven't experienced it or you don't know somebody that experienced it, it's probably going to sound really mean to say is, but you just don't know anything about it. Like it's really, you hear about it, but until you're close to it, then you have some understanding. You never really have full understanding because unless you know you're in that situation, and then every situation is different, but it's really hard to kind of speak about it when I guess some people don't want to know about it. I've been told many times shouldn't be sharing your story. It should be behind. Yeah. Yes. It's Whoa. Something that should be left behind closed doors. It's nobody needs to know about it. And that's going back to, remember back in the olden days where it's like everything was behind closed doors. It's nobody's business. Mm-hmm. So you still have that in today's society where, no, we don't need to share it. And you're having, you know, one woman a week being killed. We've had, I think, two already this year that have already been murdered due to domestic violence. So it's something that's happening so often and I can't, like, in today's society, you know, it's just it's just there and people are still scared to talk about it. And I think that comes from the embarrassment and the shame and just being told, keep it behind closed doors, keep it behind closed doors.
Can I ask your opinion? Yeah. You know, that person that said you shouldn't be sharing your story, that's a lot of S's, you shouldn't be sharing your story. If you could predict why they said that,
yeah,
why do you think they said that?
I think there's two reasons, definitely. One is they have experienced it themselves and they haven't been able to process their trauma and work on it. See, I've been through a lot of therapy, so that's why I can sit here with you today or stand and talk in front of hundreds of people because I've worked through it. I've, you know, done a lot of healing. So that's one reason they haven't done their healing and haven't come to terms with it. So it's still really hurting them, I guess. Or the second one is, I guess that could be their upbringing, their conditioning. They've been told that these things stay behind closed doors or, you know, it happened to their mother and they don't want to share it because they don't want to relive it. So I think those things can contribute to why they say, yeah.
Well, I'm so glad that you're here because I think sometimes people don't realize, and I don't know if you've gone through this as well, that even when people ask me about my story and I share it, I'm like, well, what's the big deal? It's just one story. But people don't understand that stories make up encyclopedias and novels series and so forth, and it adds to the body of knowledge.
Yeah, but I also feel it's like, and it's so weird. I just feel so weird when I say it, but I feel like I might be giving some inspiration to somebody out there who's like, if she can share our story, then maybe one day I can share my story. You know, she's out there and she's doing it. It's just like giving them hope. And I always say, like, I will be their voice until they're ready to use their voice and speak out and just, you know.
Love that.
So you've got me.
Yes. If you can see her, you can be her.
Yes.
And you can be as strong as her.
Yeah.
Back to the relationship. Yes. I have so many questions.
Like goes everywhere.
That's me. Clearly,
me too.
Horrible interviewer here. So you don't obviously have to give details or anything or identifying details, but if you can bring us back to the start, how did you meet him? And was it like?
Well, my story actually goes back further than that. As you were saying, your partner with his mother. So my mother was actually in an abusive relationship before I got into this one. So I was 9 when I tried to kill her abuser. Yes. So there was a fight. I don't remember it a lot because my mind has obviously blocked out a lot of things for me. But I do remember we used to live in some flats in Wembley. Those flats are still there. And all I remember is they were arguing and something, and then I went in the kitchen and got a knife. Like a knife.
That's not a knife.
You know? And then I just lunged and went for him, but I didn't connect because our neighbors who we were friends with had obviously heard
of the commotion.
All the commotion and everything. And they walked into the door just as I lunged. Our neighbor was able to grab me before I had connected with him. And then, you know, everyone's screaming and yelling. And then I know I got yelled at. And then I got locked in the bedroom, and then that was it. There was no more talking about it, all of that.
Brushed
under the cupboard. So my childhood, as I said, I have a lot of siblings. So by the time I was 10, I could run an entire household. I knew how to cook, how to clean, how to grocery shop, look for specials in catalogs, raise my siblings, take care of them. Like we grew up pretty poor, you know, so I'm very savvy at the moment now with that, but just knew how to run it all. So I kind of lost my childhood and, you know, like he refers back to the puppy that was kind of just put there. That's, I guess that's how I was. So then you know, my parents split when I was two and I was raising all my siblings, felt, you know, everyone was always too busy and I was busy looking after everybody and maintaining everyone and, you know, like trying to be the mum when my mum couldn't be the mum because she was black and blue and in bed, you know, sore and whatnot, you
from,
know.
From
the abuse of herself and then listening to it and everything. So I guess I was lost as well. So, you know, fast forward to being 16 and someone comes and tells you how much they love you, spoils you, gives you everything you want, you know, treats you like a princess, just makes you fall head over heels with them. Mm. You know, like when you're that young, you're just, you get swept up, you get caught up, and that's basically what happened to me. So I was warned kind of by family, friends and people who knew him not to date him because, you know, he had anger management issues, but I didn't see that, you know, like, or maybe I did, but I chose not to. But then I guess I got my first hit of reality, like literally hit, 3 months into our relationship as a 16-year-old girl, you know, he slapped me across the face, open fist, really hard, never been smacked by my parents like that at all, you know, on the bottom but never on the face. Like I can still remember the sting and the intense pain as like the tears rolled down my eyes. My face was on fire just from that slap, and tears, they don't hurt when you cry. So, you know, yeah. I could feel that just running down my face, and then it was all actually over a telephone bill. Of all things. So my boyfriend before, oh, they're boyfriends, but not really boyfriends, you know, had brought me a mobile phone and the phone bill had come through and he just called to say, hey, the phone bill's here, you need to pay for it. And I was like, yeah, cool. And that was all that it was. And then so after he slapped me, I ran into our friend's apartment and I was like, help me, you know, and went in the room and then he followed me in and they literally all were just like, what are you doing? Like, what are you doing in here?
They believed him, not you.
Yeah. And but it was also like they were just like, I don't want this stuff in my house. Go back outside. Wow. Like, we don't want to get involved. We don't care what's happening. Just don't bring it into the house. Right. We're trying to watch TV.
Oy vey.
Yeah. So then I ran outside and obviously I guess all of the, I'm so sorry, I didn't mean to do it, I love you, I just love you so much, I don't want to lose you and I'll never do it again, I promise, and all of that crap that comes with it, and I believed him.
Can we break that down a tiny bit more? Because this, I know this was a while ago, but what exactly was going through your mind when you say you believed him? But like, was it automatic? Was it like, I believe him, or was it a bit of deliberation?
It was automatic.
It was automatic.
It was automatic. And I think it was just because, and this is probably another secret as well now, I just wanted someone to love me, you know, and I want to cry now. And I think it was because he showed me that love at the start and he said that, you know, it was kind of like, okay, you must really love me. You must really want to be with me. And I also say, like, abusers, I find them to actually be quite smart because they will make you fall in love with them. They will manipulate you, you know, make you believe that you can't live without them. So when all of the abuse starts and you can actually start to notice the abuse, you don't really care.
It almost just seems part of the parcel.
It does.
Like, would you say it
definitely
just seems like this is normal because
it's part of the relationship.
Yeah.
It's just integrated into your relationship that you just don't know if it's right or wrong. But the funny thing is, though, I knew it was wrong.
This is what I mean.
Yeah.
This is what interests me.
Yeah.
And this is like you believed him.
Yeah.
But there was a part of you.
Yes. That knew it was wrong because my mum had been in that relationship and I'd witnessed it firsthand, what it did to her, what it did to my family, and yet it was still, okay, I believe you. I will stay with you. And that was 3 months into our relationship and I remember going home and that I truly believe that night part of me died.
Tell me more about that.
Yeah, so it was just we were driving home from Victoria Park and I lived in Morley. So what's that, 15, 20 minutes? I'd come up with so many lies in my head as to how I was going to tell my mum, because I got a golf-sized ball that came up on my face from that hit. And my eye was blown back and I was coming up with so many lies, so many excuses. How am I going to spin this? Wait, no, that didn't work for mum, so I'm going to say this. You know, so it was going back to what my mum had said when she was hurt or whatnot. And then so my excuse was I got hit in the head with a soccer ball because we went to a soccer game that day.
Did she believe you?
Yeah. Yeah, but it was late. I came home, it was late at night and she was watching TV and it was dark. And I kind of was like, oh, mum, I got hit in the head with a soccer ball. She was like, oh, no. And then I just went into my room. So she never actually got to, I guess, see it until kind of I told her the story. We slept on it. And then the next day, oh, wow, that's kind of like come up.
Yeah.
Come up now. Yeah.
Wow. Are you still in contact with your mum?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And have you ever talked about the story and told her the truth about it?
No, I think my mum probably won't watch this actually. My mum, like, I love her and everything, she's my mum, but my mum also has a lot of trauma and a lot of healing she needs to do for herself. But I know my mum also has a lot of guilt in her for what her children went through when they were younger because of the man, I guess, she chose to love. And then seeing me repeat her mistakes, go in the same cycle, I think it's just really hard for her to she knows it's there, and when we have events and stuff, because I do a lot of events and that, and she'll come and she'll cry. But I do a lot of speaking events and I think it's hard for my mum and my siblings to come to my speaking events. So none of them have been to my speaking events, but they come to other events that I do where it's not so deep and personal and stuff like that, because there is a lot of, I guess, trauma from our past. And it's not funny, but like still quite funny, because they remember things that I don't remember. They actually remember a lot more than what I don't.
Like what I remember.
Just things like, I guess, sometimes when my mum was in that relationship, sometimes we'd go get sent to her best friend's house and we'd stay there. I don't remember that. I don't remember, like, going anywhere. Like, I actually don't remember very much of my childhood. I just remember, like, bad times. And sometimes I remember something and I'll be like, oh, cool, I remember that, you know. And then other times I'm like, what are you talking about? Like,
it's amazing.
Are you sure that happened?
It's amazing how the brain works.
Yes.
It's such a beautiful, I mean, I love the brain for so many reasons, but it's, even though it sucks that we can't remember some things, it's such a beautiful thing that the brain does to protect us.
Definitely.
In some ways. When you were talking about your mom feeling guilty about what she put you, and I said quote unquote,
yes,
she didn't put you through anything,
was,
you know, this complex. Do you ever feel that guilt for your kids?
100%.
Interesting. Now, the reason why I asked you that is, do you ever want to tell your mom, don't feel guilty, it wasn't your fault?
Yeah, we've said it.
And then
she knows.
Do you think your kids are going to tell you that same thing? Mom, don't feel guilty, it wasn't your fault, we love you.
I would like to hear them say it. I don't know. Wow, that's, you know, I'd love to hear them say that, but I think I will always have that guilt. To be honest, like, and I say, oh, this is like going to make me cry. I can't talk about my kids and my siblings without crying, because it's just like, I love my kids to death. Like, they're the best thing I ever had, but I wish I could have given them a better father. I wish I could have chosen someone better for them. You know, and I hear the saying of like, your children choose you. You know, and it's like, yeah, I believe they do, but in a sense I'm still like, I wish things were different for them. In a way, I wish, because they don't have a relationship with their father. They haven't seen him since, gosh, 2016, which is a good thing, you know, because it was hard for them. And I don't regret having them. And regret's a big word. I regret my relationship with their father. And I regret that he's their father. Like, that's something that will, I think, haunt me Sorry.
It's quite fun. That's why the
two shoes are there. Can I ask,
was at this retreat once. Yep. And there was a lady there in the audience, and one of her siblings was in a car accident mm-hmm. and passed away. And the lady that was on stage was a paraplegic. Mm-hmm. And this lady asked the person on stage, do you think everything's for a reason?
Yep.
The lady said, absolutely not. Yeah.
Oh.
And I thought that's really interesting yep. because the lady on stage, surfer, runner, very yep. active, climbed mountains and so forth. Actually, Sam Bloom, there's a great, beautiful, beautiful movie about her.
Okay.
Now, I was really surprised at that answer. I thought, of course, everything's for a meaning. I wouldn't be here speaking yes. to you. I wouldn't be changing lives. Yep. She said, no, I want to run. I want to surf. I want to do all these things. Answer blew me away. Mm. So I guess I want to ask you that. You know, do you think everything's for a reason?
I do.
Okay.
I do. I think everything I went through, that's okay, is for me to do what I do now, 100%. Everything of my childhood with my mom, everything that I went through has made me the person I am today, has made me the strong person I am today, except when it comes to talking about my kids. But I also have a kind of a motto that I remind myself, which is if I can just save one person from going through what I went through, then everything I went through was worth it. You know, I do believe that even though it's as crappy as it is what I went through, if it can just stop someone from getting into that relationship and living their life to the fullest, you know, like actually living it and not just surviving. Because I survived for 16 years. That's how long I was in my relationship.
16?
Yeah. So 16 years at the age of 16. Yeah.
What I'm thinking of is like, you know, when you're 16, my stepdaughter Tiffany is 16.
Yeah.
And, you know, she reminds me of myself. Like I was I was a horrible 16-year-old to say, like, you know, horrible.
Yep.
But we don't have a brain yet. We have no brain. We have no sense of what's right or wrong at that time until you're around 25. That's when you, most people, perhaps not me, but most people have a bit of a sense of right or wrong. You were 16. Mm-hmm. Not only do you not have this capacity, physiological capacity, but then you had this on top of it.
Yes. That's it. So when I got out of the relationship, I started doing therapy. And my therapist said, we actually have to rewire your brain because you were 16, so obviously so long, and then you went through so much of it that your brain just doesn't function properly. Yeah. So, yeah, definitely it's
wow
crazy.
You obviously hear stories of quite a few women.
Yes.
I presume it's mostly women. I don't want to bias anything.
It is, yes.
But mostly women. And have you ever had someone message you to say, I've heard you speak and I've actually left him?
Yes, I do. It is.
Without telling details?
Yeah, it's amazing. Like just, you know, I don't know if you know, I've published a book with a lot of other authors.
We will definitely put the links in everywhere.
So, all of the links, you know, it's just people like, I've just finished reading the book or I read your article or I follow you on social media, you know, thank you. Like, you know, because I put it out there so publicly and it's who I am, you know, and I think that is what gives people that hope and inspiration, as I was saying before. But I've done talks and I have people just come up and just boil their eyes out and just like, oh my gosh, thank you so much. Like, I didn't realize that's what was happening to me and now I can see it, like, you know. Or I've had men come up to me and talk to me. I don't know what it is. It's so weird, but I will go somewhere and for some reason, this is like makes me laugh every time, people who have domestic violence experience just get drawn to me. They don't know who I am. Like,
no way,
nobody knows nothing, and they'll just open up. and it would just come out. And I'm just like, well, actually. And they're like, what? And I'm like, yeah, I went to my partner's end of work event thing, and I was just chatting to a guy and he was just talking, blah, blah, blah. He started crying.
Oy vey, what?
A grown man just started telling me his story about his ex-partner who was abusive, and he just started crying in the middle of a restaurant. And I was like, what? Wow. And but it's everywhere, markets, shopping centers. It's just, it's like something, I have something that just says, just open up to me, just tell me everything. And it's funny, but I think it's funny because
it's a beautiful characteristic.
Like, we can't take you anywhere, you know.
Whenever I'm taking an Uber somewhere and the people I'm meeting are there, and I'm usually 5-10 minutes late, and I walk in, they're like, so do you have another deep and meaningful with an Uber driver?
Yep.
Every single time.
Yeah.
Every single time.
Well, it's funny, like, my partner will probably like kill me for sharing this story, but when I first met him, we actually met in a nightclub of all places.
Okay, you gotta give every detail here.
And so we walked in and he spilled a drink on me, and then I was like, oh, he was like, is that your drink? And I was like, yeah, but it wasn't. It was somebody else's. And then he invited me into his booth and we started chatting, and I was just like, I know you from somewhere. Like, I recognized him. I had a vibe, like I never met him in my life.
Yeah.
So we chatted for 2 seconds. I walked out. Then I walked back in 15 minutes later, sat down on the lounge in a nightclub, and he shared his whole life story with me.
No way, Jose.
In a nightclub of all places. I was like, and he's like telling me what he does for work, what his hopes and dreams are, his past, what he's studying, past relationships, all of this stuff. And I'm just like, this is amazing. He's just like opening up to me. So I don't know what it is, whether it's just my aura or whatever I put out there, that people are just like, I can talk to her. So
some people they just do. Have that je ne sais quoi.
Yeah.
So how was it? I mean, can you give us a bit of a time frame of when you left your ex, and then was there a bit of a time gap before you met your current partner?
Yeah, so in between leaving my ex and my current partner, I actually got married and divorced.
Okay.
Yeah.
And let's dive down.
I've had an interesting life, I'll tell you what. So I guess when I was with my ex-partner, my abuser, I was feeling down, you know, lost all confidence. My nickname was Piggy. So I was a little bit more overweight. So my nickname was Piggy. And
who gave you that?
My ex did.
Your abuser?
Yes. And his friends would call me it as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I just lost everything, lost confidence, felt fat, old, you know, mum with two kids, who's going to want you? And I got that constantly every day. So it breaks you down over time. And then I went away with some girlfriends overseas for a few days, and a young boy hit on me. And that kind of gave me all that, maybe I've still got it somehow, you know. And so that kind of gave me my boost back. So then I came home, and then something changed in me sort of after that. But I know mentally and spiritually and everything, I'd left that relationship already. Like, I was just there, you know. I wanted my children, I guess, to have two parents because I didn't have that. So I think that's another reason why I feel I stayed in that relationship as well for a lot longer. So then just started hanging out, going out with my girlfriends, you know, getting dolled up and, you know, maybe I can get out there, you know. And then I met my ex-husband when we were out, and then I kind of, there was a slight overlap, but I was already planning to leave because I kind of started getting that confidence and all of that. And then we got engaged 6 months after I left my abuser. And then we got married about a year later, and then got divorced 3 years later, I think, give or take. And that was because, this is another secret that some people don't know, I caught him cheating on me.
Wow.
Yeah. So.
Gosh golly, you've gone through a couple of bumps and bruises.
Yeah, I have. And, you know, like, I could have worked on it. You know, we could have sorted it out. But for the last, like the 16 years before that, I just kind of, I get like, because obviously my abuser was cheating on me.
He was.
He had two full-on relationships with other women when he was with me that I knew about.
That you knew about?
Yes.
During, but you couldn't,
Do nothing.
You couldn't say anything,
no.
Right?
I heard him say to the other girls that he loved them and everything. Yeah. So you'd think, well, if that's not a sign to get out, what is? No, still stayed. And then I was just like, so then with my husband, like my ex-husband, I was just like, I want to end this now because I don't want to go back to that feeling of who's he texting? Where's he going? I couldn't trust him anymore. And yeah, sure, you can build that trust back and et cetera, but I was like, no, I can't do that. I can't live like that again, you know, like because he worked FIFO and she was at sight.
Right.
So it's kind of like, how am I going to feel for the 2 weeks that you're away? I'm going to be like, are you with her? What are you doing? Yeah. So saw the text messages and everything on the phone and whatnot and kicked him out straight away. I was like, no, done.
Wow.
And then so then after that I was kind of just don't want to be in a relationship, don't want to – so I had a few friends.
Yeah.
You know, as you
friends
do.
Friends with benefits.
Friends with benefits because, you know, like – as for 16 years, I was only with the same person.
Yeah.
So I never stepped out of our relationship, never went anywhere, never looked at anyone, never talked to any other guys or nothing. Yeah. So I was completely faithful, even though he was doing all of this stuff. So I had my friends with benefits.
Absolutely.
And then, so then I met my current partner and we've been together for 2 years. So it's good.
Have you had challenges with your current partner in regards to, like, do you ever find that you default for even a moment, a split second back into?
Yeah, I do. I do sometimes, you know, just like if it's not even like an argument, let's just say an argument, it's not really an argument, but I will shut down. If he's like, doesn't like disagrees with something, you know, whatever, instead of getting what I want to say, I will just shut down and I'll just sit there quietly, even though I want to say something because I'm like, oh, no, stop, because if you keep going, what's going to happen? Not that he would ever do that, but, you know, it's just that automatic, oh, wait, no, just go back in, just be quiet because you know what's happened before. Like,
right, your abuser.
Exactly.
Yep.
Yeah, gotcha. So now I'm a lot better. Mm-hmm. When I first left that relationship and was with my ex-husband, I was quite bad. I was always looking to fight, always looking for a fight. And if he wouldn't argue or yell at me, I'm like, what's wrong with you?
Huh.
Constantly, always picking, always found something, just shutting down. It got to the point where I remember one time we went out and we were having the best time. It was like the beach, you know. It was a group of us and then I was really happy. And then about 2 hours into this, I kind of like just blacked out. Still active, like still doing everything, but my mind blacked out. It was kind of like my mind didn't want to take in this happiness because if I take in this happiness, something bad's going to happen.
You're going to jinx it.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole afternoon I was a total itch and just was angry, just I don't want to go, I don't want to do this, I don't want to do that, I hate sand, I don't want to do this. And I was at the beach 2 hours before, fine, but it was just like something.
You switched
it. I switched it because I was just like, no, I'm going to prepare myself.
Self-sabotage.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, I got to be ready. Like, because throw me into chaos and watch me thrive, which is not what you want, you know. Like, I used to go when I was going out and going to clubs, I could pick fights before they would even happen. That I'd be like to the bouncers, oh, they're going to smash. And they're like, no. And then the next second, like I could just feel the energy, just know the way people were. It's just bad. So I was always on high alert, you know, always what's going on? Like couldn't just relax.
Well, 30 plus years of understanding that energy and when something is said in a certain tone or a certain way, you can predict
exactly
a few steps forward.
Yeah.
So I think it's kind of like, you know, if you step this way, you get burnt.
Yeah.
You know, you don't step that way anymore.
Yeah.
You start to prepare yourself to
move
in a certain way. if you will. So yep. I know my partner said the same, like he just could tell.
Yes.
He could tell when he could be a bit more rambunctious mm-hmm. and then when he just had to be quiet.
Yes.
And you start changing who you are as a person.
Exactly.
Because you're so scared
yeah.
of the person who's meant to love you.
Yes, that's it. And it's, I guess, a fear of them losing you. Mm. So you will make yourself whoever they want you to be just so they'll stay with you. Mm-hmm. Like if that kind of makes sense.
It makes perfect sense to me because I was 16. I had a Turkish boyfriend. This is when I was in Rome. Mm-hmm. And I still remember this. It was in high school and we had all our pigeonholes, mm-hmm. you know, where you get your assignments
yes.
back and, you know, beautiful Rome, Italy, and there's marble floors. And he hit me exactly
yep.
like your partner did at 16, whacked me so hard my head hit the marble floor.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, well, like one, my ear was ringing.
Yes.
I couldn't hear for like a day or two because it was really bad. But I kept on thinking, oh, maybe he's going to break up with me.
Yeah.
And which is not logical. Not
exactly.
Because you think, well, if you're going to do that, watch me now. But it yeah. was the opposite. It was, I don't want to be alone.
Yes.
You know, that's clearly it. I must have done something to deserve this.
That's it. You put all the blame on yourself.
Yeah.
And it's, and like you look back now and you're like, actually, that's got nothing to do with me.
Nothing
that's
at all.
That's not who I am as a person. I didn't make him do that, you know.
And it's funny, all these years later, I remember I was going through the Fiumicino airport. This is probably one of my 14 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I remember I saw him. He was a baggage handler.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
It flipped me out like you would not believe. It was like, mm-hmm. you know, when you just paralyzed.
Yes. Yes.
I saw him. And I always thought in that moment, I said to myself, I bet you his dad was abusive.
Yes.
With his mom. And it was in that moment that I, all of a sudden, all these things started coming mm-hmm. back. And this is, you know, 15 years later. And I remember just remembering hearing the dad speak to the mom in a certain mm-hmm. way or just how he yes. was different on one day to another day. He was more quiet when he went home versus other
yes.
days. And everything sort of fell into place.
Yes.
I was like, monkey see, monkey do.
Well, that's it. And then I feel also like when you've gone through it and you come out of it, you recognize the signs mm-hmm. a lot clearer and a lot faster mm-hmm. than someone who hasn't. So I can go out and I can see things. I'm like, oh, no. Like you can just
yeah, you
see,
can
it.
See it.
You can see it and process it all.
I was at the foreshore and this guy was speaking so incredibly he was just putting down this woman and he was starting yelling louder and louder and louder. And I was looking around like I had my two dogs and it was this and that. All these people just looking. And I'm like, why is no one going up to her?
Yeah.
And I was waiting. I was like, you know, 30 seconds, 45 seconds because I was a bit further away. I'm like, I'm beelining to her.
Yeah.
And I just, you know, I'm 5 foot nothing.
Yeah,
on my great days, this guy was like 6'2". And I brought him up, was like, sorry, are you okay?
Yes.
And this is 6 foot. My partner probably, if he hears the story, is going to kill me. But I'm like, why is no one doing anything?
Yeah. And that comes back to, it's not your business.
Oh, fuck.
Mind your business.
It is
like,
absolutely.
That's it. And you do need to speak up and you do need to call it out.
Yeah.
Because that's how it's going to stop,
absolutely.
You know.
I said, I live right there. Why don't you just come home with me for a bit?
Yep.
Cool off. I can drive you home. Where do you live?
Yeah.
Or if you don't feel comfortable with me, tell me. I will pay for your Uber to get you somewhere safe.
That's good. Good on you.
It makes me effing irate, as you can tell.
Yeah.
Just to remember that story that no one did anything.
Yeah. And that's unfortunately, that happens every day, multiple times a day. Like,
keep on hitting you as we were talking, but yeah. But,
getting excited.
Yeah, but I think, would you say some part of it, because there was some part of me that I'm like, I don't know what he's going to do to me. So I kind of get that. But at the same time, like, she's a woman.
Yeah.
You help her.
And I think that's a lot of fear. Like, everybody has a lot of fear. What's going to happen to me if I go and stop this? Is he going to turn around and attack me?
Mm-hmm.
Is he going to hurt me?
I'm a fucking ninja, though.
Yeah, well, that's good then.
No, I'm actually not, but in that moment, I think I could be. I heard this saying. It was by the Australian of the Year. The standard you walk by is the standard you accept.
Yes.
And man, that blew my mind because that's exactly what I was thinking in that moment. If I walk home and I don't do anything.
That's it.
Then I'm saying that's okay.
But it's also going to play on your mind.
Oh, God, yes.
It would play on your mind for so long. But if you look at it a different way, you know, you're talking about all the people that were standing around. Did you ever want, now I'm going to interview you now.
Yeah, yeah, please do.
Did you ever wonder why she wasn't saying anything? Like why she kind of just allowed him, I guess.
Petrified.
To, yeah.
And she was probably mortified as well being in public.
Yeah.
She's probably looking around, oh my God, everyone is looking at me.
Yes.
Everyone's thinking I'm this stupid girl for being in this relationship. Yeah. I knew exactly
like,
what was
what
going
are they thinking
mind.
Of me? But she's probably also worried about what will happen when they get home.
You know what? I absolutely agree with that as well, but I'm not going to take that chance.
Oh, yeah. No, 100%. I'm not going to take that chance.
But I have
100%.
Yeah. I'm thinking, am I making her life worse?
Yeah.
And am then, I making her life worse?
Yeah.
Again, you know, it's an excellent point. So do you, going back, and I'm not saying, you know, that you did something wrong, but what, if someone's listening to this and they see that happening because you were in that situation, what would you suggest people do?
If you see that and you feel that you can't do something to yourself, call the police.
Mm-hmm.
Just call the police. Just to have it on record.
Mm-hmm.
You know that something's happened because police have to keep it on record, even if you don't know who they are. Maybe see if you can somehow stalk them to get a car number plate or something like that. If you feel that you can't personally approach them, like I've driven down the street once and, you know, this guy was going and yelling same thing to a girl at a bus stop. I just started beeping my horn, turned around. I was like, hey, stayed in my car. And I was like, hey, girlfriend, is the bus like running late? Do you need a lift? And she's like, no, I'm okay. You know, but it's just that thing of, I see you. I see what's happening to you. You know, if you don't think you can stop it, then just raise awareness or speak really loud in yourself and be like, you know, just something so that they know that somebody can see them and you're not alone. And even sometimes like the perpetrator, I guess he forgets where he is sometimes because he gets in that moment. Yes.
Tunnel vision.
That's it. So, you know, breaking that tunnel vision and just be like, yo, you know, or things like that. Like you see, you know, when you go clubbing and you see sometimes guys, I know things happen to men as well, but as a female, I can only speak from female perspective. Yep. Like, you know, if a guy is trying to take a girl home and she's really drunk and doesn't want to go, a good thing is to go up to your girlfriend and be like, hey, you know, the car's this way. Like it's just helping each other out. Just, so you know you're not alone. Like, because that's one of the biggest things when you're in a deep relationship is you feel so alone. You think you're alone, you know, so then you kind of just close in.
Yeah, you start snail going in.
Yeah.
I have to admit right now, all I can think about is I wonder if I caused harm to that woman.
Yeah, but it's hard because whether I think sometimes like whether you intervened or not, whatever he was thinking, planning of happening would have happened anyway.
See, now I feel guilty.
Like, don't feel good. Like what you did was amazing.
Mm.
But what I'm trying to say is like that, like I love that you stopped it, you know, but what I'm saying is like other people sometimes may be scared.
I just think that's such a good lesson for people listening to this because you don't think, sometimes people don't say anything or some people who are clearly, you know, very verbose like I am. Say, but you don't think about all the other situations.
Yeah.
And I
see,
think this
I
is
only
so important.
Can say that because I've been there, so I can come from a different perspective. That's why I asked you the question because I'm coming from that other, the other side, which is why women also don't call the police because of what are the consequences.
Absolutely, or they're not going to be believed.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, so summarize what to do. If you do see it, you could either do something funny like you did.
Yeah.
Like, you know, hey, girl.
Yeah.
I haven't seen you for a while.
That's
You sort of make it almost like that no matter what, she could just say, oh, yeah, that's a girlfriend. She
yeah.
must have just been driving by.
Exactly. But it's breaking that intensity.
Okay.
Because they get, with my ex-partner, they get very focused on what they're doing, nothing else.
Okay.
It's that whole tunnel vision.
It's like a dog attacking another dog. They just like the dog manager.
That's it. And if he's doing it on the street, he doesn't care, you know, so it's breaking that tunnel vision, just being like,
okay,
hey, stop. Or, you know, just if they're arguing, like if you're in the park, just running, like, oh my gosh, my dog just ran past. Did you see him?
Yep.
Sorry to interrupt. You know, it's just, it's like weird things, but it's, just something, and then be like, oh, do I know you? You know, hang on a second. Are you such and such a sister? You know, it's just, it doesn't have to be so direct. And then he may be like, whoa, at you, but like, be like, oh, sorry.
Yeah.
You know, but it's just that breaking that concentration, because then he may realize, hang on a second, there's people around me.
Yeah.
You know, there's people watching me, because then that can also make him feel embarrassed and be like, oh, you know, it's that whole breaking. So doing something like that, or if you feel that you can't do that yourself, calling the police, or if you're somewhere that has security, go get security, or reporting it, or, you know, just something.
Or would you say if you're in a crowd or something like that, would you be like, would one thing be to go to someone else and say, hey, I'm seeing this happen.
Yeah.
You know, would you walk over with me and do you think that's also going to maybe?
It could be, the perpetrator could feel intimidated depending on who goes there. Like I feel.
I think being 5 foot nothing is not generally too intimidating.
Yeah. But it's really hard because it depends on each individual.
Right.
As well. You know, the person, like if you. Like, so for example, I think if my partner and I went to go up to someone, or just my partner went to someone that was doing it, I feel like the person would probably want to punch up with my partner.
Gotcha.
Do you know what I mean? Whereas if I kind of went up, it's a bit more, oh, she's a female. Like,
gotcha.
It's not as intimidating as threatening, but
yep.
I mean, men, women, call it out. Call it out for what it is, you know, don't be...
I love
scared.
Those. So security or police, that's the other thing. You know, keep yourself
definitely.
Safe, call someone.
That's it.
And I guess nowadays, it's horrible to say this, but we all have cameras.
Record it. Exactly.
Record it.
Exactly. Record it. You know, and I don't know how the law system works, but might not be able to be allowed in court, but at least
there's proof.
It's so sad to say, but like building a case file. You know, you don't want to build a case file, but, you know, like during my 16 years of my relationship, I only called the police 3 times. And you know, I was getting abused constantly and everything. Two major times was I left and I went to my dad's house. My father lives in Mandurah. He followed us to Mandurah and was just banging and smashing on the doors. We called the police. Took him forever to come. Banging on the police. And then somehow, because we were all in the house, I think my dad went out to talk to him or something, and then my son got out. My son was little. He grabbed my son and ran down the street with my son. And I've never seen my dad run so fast in his life. My dad's like a short little fat guy. In his jocks. My dad was always naked. I don't know why. Sorry, Dad. But I've never seen him run. So then the cops finally came, got my son back and everything. And then he just got a move on notice. I remember that. And then, second time I had left and I went back to see my son, because even though I'd left, I still wanted my children to have that relationship with their father. So I took my son back to see him and he locked me in the house. I got locked with it. So, you know, like, hey, the front door, you've got your lock at the top that you use with the key and then just your sand lock. So he locked the door with the key. So there's no way I could get out. And then just a whole argument started and it was intense. Like, I'm talking like I was bleeding. And I had to run through this house, jump a fence. I fell down because I just never jumped a fence in my life. Fell down on the ground. and walked around the streets bleeding, trying to find someone's house to knock on the door. I was more scared of knocking on a stranger's door, asking them to call the police, than I was in the house.
Wow. Why is that?
Because I didn't want anyone to know what was happening to me.
Yeah.
I didn't want anyone to know that I was getting abused in the house. And the only reason that I had to knock on that door was because my son was still in the house.
Yeah.
I had to leave and leave my son in that house.
Oh, my God.
Just to be able to get out. Because I knew he wouldn't do anything to my son.
Yeah.
But I had to leave him just to know, just to get out of that and get the cops.
Far out.
So I called the police to come, and then I went to, I think I went to a phone box, and somehow I'd called, like I didn't have credit on my mobile. I somehow called my mum, was like, "Mum, call me back," just before the phone disconnected. And then I had to tell her where my son was what had happened. So she came and got me. I was at the shops and they came and got me. And I'm pretty sure my younger brother was in the car. He was in the back. She came and got me, and we sat just kind of, so it was a really long street, and we sat maybe like 5-6 houses away in her car. And we were there for maybe 45 minutes. And then I saw a cop car pull up, and I was like, yes. Then I saw it turn around and drive away. And I was like, are you kidding me? My child is in this house. And I didn't want to go into the house, and I did not want my mum to go in there at all, you know. So then the cop car finally came out, and then they knocked on the door and he let him out. My son's like, hi, mum, you know, like completely fine.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I don't even know what happened. I don't know if he got charged or anything. I think the police officer, I had to go and make a statement. Mm. And then I had to go to hospital to get, checked up. Didn't want to go again. Don't want the record of it. Don't want anyone to know. Got to the hospital, got checked up, and she said, why are you here? And I was just like, couldn't talk, just cried. And she was like, oh, darling. But even though she wasn't, like, I don't feel, how do I say it? I don't think she was like giving me pity, but that's how it felt.
Yep.
You know, I think she was genuinely empathetic and, you know, just like, sweetheart, like, you know, I'm sorry you're going through this, you know, that kind of thing. But I still felt like she's judging me. She must think I'm so stupid. She must think, why are you in this relationship? How could you put yourself into this? Which, yeah, I don't think she was thinking that at all. But, you know, I didn't want to have record of it. I didn't want to know that it was somewhere with the police. I didn't want none of that.
If it's not on record, it didn't happen.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So much easier just to forget about
it. Forget about it. Well, that's, you know, it. And just push it under.
Wow.
Under the rug, and yeah.
It's amazing. It's amazing what you've gone through, but at the same time, you were so worried not only about what your abuser was going to do to you, but also what other people thought of you.
Oh, yeah.
So you could not win.
No, not at all.
Because you were punishing yourself at exactly the same time as he was punishing you.
Yes.
So it's a double whammy.
That's it. And, like, my family kind of knew what was going on, but never really approached me. Well, they did approach me once. It was my daughter's first birthday, at her birthday party. You know, they said, I think you should leave him. And I was like, how dare you talk to me about this on my daughter's first birthday? Who do you think you are? What are you talking about? Like, how dare you bring this up? Like, are you off your head? Like, you know, and just went into defense mode. And then they never really brought it up again, but they knew. They knew because I would cancel on family events, and then they would FaceTime me. Why are you canceling? Mm. But I knew where to sit in the house. I knew how to cover my face and hold my phone for the lighting, so that you couldn't see if
the
I
evidence
had bruised. Yeah, pretty much.
So maybe I think what I'd love to end on is some really tangible advice for not only people who feel that are in your situation, but also the people around them that love them and don't know what they can do.
Yeah.
So maybe if we can start with 1, 2, 3 things that if you are in the situation that you were in,
yes,
and incredibly got out of it, because I think a lot of people don't. Could you give even just a few things that a person can do when they're feeling so scared and vulnerable and ashamed?
Stay strong. You know, that's my biggest thing. I know how hard it is. I know how dark it is and how you just feel there's nothing. You know, it's just stay strong, like, and just keep your eye on that light at the end of the tunnel. You know, like, that's the biggest thing. Don't give up hope, because sometimes hope is all you can. You can. And, you know, like, if you do leave, or you can start your life again and live the life that you really deserve. Actually live, not survive, because we're just surviving. You know, you're just worried, what's the next thing that's going to happen? Walking on eggshells. You want to be able to go out there and just be free, you know, like that's a big thing. And really, like, another really good thing is if you are planning on leaving, like, slowly start to get a safety plan together, which I have on my socials and my plug here and website, you know, just slowly start to plan your escape, but also keep in mind that it can take up to 7 times before you successfully leave. I went back twice. You know, if you don't stay out when you're out, that's okay. You know,
don't feel like a failure.
You've got more time, you've got more chances. You know, when you plan on leave, like, if you're planning on leaving, make sure it's safe. Make sure it's safe for you to leave. And it's, they're like, huh? That sounds weird. Yeah. But most women, unfortunately, are murdered when they've left. You know, it's when they have left. It's, I think it's within the first year of leaving. That's what the statistics say. And a woman has a 70% more chance of being killed when she's leaving. Jeez. So, you know, when I say it's safe, you know, maybe when he's gone to work, It's kind of like literally escaping, because that's the safest time for you, you know, to get out of the house. When I left, it was just called my mum and she came and I left. But that half an hour was hell. Like, you know, I couldn't just still go out, but I was like, I need to now. Like, I need to go. And just another really big thing is you're not alone. You are not alone.
You do feel that way, I imagine.
You do feel that way, but you're not. You know, there are so many other people going through the same thing. There are people who have come out of it, who are living their life. Look to them for inspiration. Look for them to hope. And, you know, there are so many agencies that can help you. So many. There is help out there. You know, it's hard to find.
Can you name a couple of them?
Yeah, so you've got your women's refuges, like Zonta House. You know, there's a place called Metal Gifts that can help you find jobs and help, you know, put you back into employment. Centrelink gives you assistance for domestic violence. The Commonwealth Bank, which I'm really proud to say I worked on that with them, will give you, you know, some money to help rebuild yourself, help rebuild your life after you get out. You know, there's therapy for yourself, therapy for your children, there's housing, there's food bank, there's a lot of places that can help you get back on your feet. You know, and I guess I'm talking and it sounds really easy. It's not. It's it's a hard road. It's definitely a hard road. But you just got to keep going, you know, and just, as I said, focus on that light at the end of the tunnel and stay strong and stay beautiful, because you are a beautiful person. Like, you know, you might not feel like it, and hell, I didn't feel like it for a long time, you know, but just, it's just those little things, I think, that you just got to keep focusing on, like, create your own little world in your mind. I did that, you know, just to help get me through things and just know that there will be a better day, you know, just, and it's hard to, you know, because unfortunately there are some women who may have wanted to leave and haven't been able to. You know, and I understand that, but it's just trying to build the courage and everything. to leave.
It is kind of like bricklaying, isn't it?
It is.
Like it's, you know, you might try and then you learn something, then you lay another brick and so forth and so on. And
that's
I think knowledge. So are all these places listed on your website? Okay, great.
Yes.
So we're going to link all those and so forth.
And on my social media. So I'm quite more active on my social media. I just actually posted a safety plan on there.
Okay, great.
But
people can contact you.
Yes, definitely.
You don't mind.
No, that's fine. If anyone wants to chat or where should I go, I'm all up to helping somebody because you do feel alone. So knowing that I can be there with you and it's completely fine for me, and just remember that it's not always the first time you'll get out, but don't lose hope in that sense, because you can. Yeah.
I think women always think that if you don't get it right on the first try, you know, your failure is like, you know, even when I'm sewing, like, I haven't made a couture gown when I'm just learning how to sew. I might as well quit. Like, very bad comparison, but it's that sort of
same
thought.
And I think with women, we don't actually know how strong we are until we get thrown in hot water, like a cup of tea, right?
Yeah.
Like when the tea bag sits in the water for so long, it just gets stronger and stronger. Okay. So women, we are definitely strong in ourselves, and we just got to remember that. Like, you know.
I think everyone's going to be remembering that after this. So now what about for people out of like friends and family? Like what signs and symptoms should we be looking for? And then if we do know, what can we do knowing that there's a time and a place?
Yes, definitely time and a place is to talk about it. Mm. Some things you may notice is your friends are getting more isolated, not being themselves, the change in their personality, even change in what they're wearing. You know, you may find someone starts to cover up a bit more or, I can't go out because he doesn't like it. But generally you can feel the change in the energy when they walk in the room. When he walks in the room, you'll feel her change.
Okay.
You know, you can sort of – it might even just be a slight
tense
or a sit up or, you know, it's a change in personalities. But – in saying that, also, he may be very good at playing his role. So he may be the loving partner and making everyone fall in love with him. So when something happens, you don't believe him.
Yeah.
You know, so it's little things, or the obvious ones are obviously if she has bruises or cuts or you see it yourself, you know.
But so much is emotional and psychological.
It is a lot more emotional and psychological now. So it's those changes in your friends that you notice. And one of the biggest things that I can say to anybody who has any, I guess, thinking that something's happening to their friend is if that person comes to you and opens up, that you believe them. You believe what they are saying to you. And I say that is because imagine how much courage and strength that they've had to pull in themselves to come and say, hey, this is what's happening at home to me. And you're like, no way. He's such a nice guy.
All of a sudden you have two abusers.
Yeah. But not only that, I'm never going to tell you anything again.
Yeah.
Because you didn't believe me. I told you my deepest, darkest secret and you didn't believe what was happening to me. I don't want to tell you anymore. Do you know what I mean? It's just like, because it's so hard because there's so much shame and embarrassment and all of that surrounding DV. So for me to open up and you'd be like, no, it's kind of hard. And with that also is it's like if – you believe her and it's all good and you'll be like, oh, you know, come to my house and whatnot. If she leaves him and goes back, still support her. Still be there for her, because we know it's hard, because there's so many issues that can be the reason why she had to go back. You know, like some women don't work. So they come out, they don't know how to work, they don't know where to get money. I'm just going to go back because you pay for everything and I have children. They need needs, you know, and it's not about the money, but it's if you don't know how to make money yourself, sometimes it's just easier. And it's weird because it's like, it's easier to go back even though the situation's bad. I went back because it was just easier. It's just easier. Like, he was harassing me and calling me. I was like, I can't deal with that anymore. I'll just go back because I know how to deal with being in that situation.
It's almost like that saying, you know, keep your friends close and your enemies closer. It's kind of like that in some ways.
Exactly. It is. It is. And like, I always think some of the things I say is so weird. That's why I'm always like, this is going to sound so funny or this is going to sound so weird, because me saying it sounds weird. And I'm like, if you don't know it, so they're probably like, what is she talking about? Like, she's smiling and saying it's weird, but it's like, but this is my experience and how I see it. Because in my mind, I'm like, I should know this. Like, I should have known this. And now I'm saying out loud, it's like, like.
You know what? I think if life made sense, we wouldn't have podcasts. We wouldn't have movies. We wouldn't have anything like that. Like, if life were so predictable in our decision making.
Yes.
I mean, God, how boring would it be?
Yeah, that is true. That is true. Another thing is, if you have a friend that you think maybe abused, or a family member or whatnot, and you kind of want to introduce it, another good way that, and feel free to use this, everybody, is just to say, hey, I came across this Instagram page. Oh, I met this girl called Cherie. This is her story.
Yeah.
And then, like, oh, follow her account, or look at this, or, you know, like.
She's so inspirational.
Something like that. Just introduce it very casually.
Right.
Because your friend may be like, okay, she's talking about DV. She may start to feel comfortable because you've kind of brought it up but not really brought it up.
Mm-hmm.
So it's opened that door for them if they want to walk through. But if they don't walk through, you don't know, they may contact me.
That's
or it may just be like, oh, I've heard her story, or she's given me some great advice, or I know how to follow these steps. You know, so it's kind of like opening that door without going, is he abusing you?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, because, again, shame and embarrassment is a massive thing. So that's another way to do it. And I guess, like, obviously, even coming up with little codes or anything with your friends, like if you know, if she's left and then she's gone back, you guys can say, okay, well, if you're locked in the house or something, like, ask me how my cat is.
Yeah.
And that could be a code. I did actually post something and went viral. Very happy of that. Uh-huh. So it was like, if I call you and something's wrong, no, wait. Oh, now I've completely forgotten. Something like, if I call you and you ask me about my orange cat, I know you're okay. If you ask me about my black cat, I know to call the police and you're not okay.
I just got goosebumps.
Yeah.
All
but it's something simple like that.
Wow.
And there's hand signals when FaceTiming.
Yeah.
Lots of little things to that. And then don't be afraid to call the police.
Mm.
Don't be afraid. Build that case file again, you know. And you don't want to think like that. But sometimes you have to.
Yeah.
You know, build that case file against him. Have that report of the police so the police can say, hang on a minute, we've had a few reports about this. We've had a few of this. So then if something major comes up and there's a house from inside the call, because obviously they can track the calls, they will know we need to get to this house now.
Yep.
Because whether it's going to be a flag, you know, flag it up. But just support your friend. Just be there for them, because you – sometimes you don't realize that you are what's giving them hope.
Mm.
You are their light just by being there.
Mm.
You don't even have to talk about what's happening. It's just having that someone that just wants to be with you. You know, like, we can still feel alone inside, but it's just knowing that you're by my side, you know. So just being there.
Sometimes the best thing, you know, like, you know, when I'm in a bit of a mood or something like that, all I want to do is just sit on the couch with my partner, and sometimes we're on opposite ends, but we touch toes.
Footsies, I do it all the time.
We just touch our toes, and sometimes we'll just go like that.
But that's enough sometimes.
And that's all I need.
Yeah.
That's all I need.
That's it.
And other times I want tough love.
Yeah.
It's just sort of balancing.
Yeah.
Such great ideas. We're definitely going to make sure to link everyone. So we're going to end on a bit of a speed round with three questions.
Oh, okay.
Okay. First, what is the best advice you've ever received?
Oh God, that's actually hard. This is gonna again really funny. I'm gonna say it's the advice I've given to myself.
Love that.
And it is, look how far you have come. I think that, and that's probably the advice I can give. I'm not going to give everyone as well. Look at how far you've come. Like, never in a million years did I think a few years ago that I would be where I am today, that I would be sitting here talking to you, that I would be talking in front of Parliament, that I would, you know, have a book and things like that. Like, I never thought. So look back at how far I think I've come. Love
that. Love that. What's the worst advice you've ever received?
Get over it already.
I'm like,
yes. And it actually came from a friend. So I was doing everything and she's like, just get over it already. How are you not over it already? And I was like, sorry? Are you serious? How do you get over this already? You don't. I will never, ever be fully over it. I've just learned how to heal, how to process it, how to deal with it, how to, you know, get on with my life. But I will never be over it. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. I could unpack that so much, but I'm not going to. All right. Last question is, finish the sentence. The lesson I've learned from my experiences is?
How fucking amazing I am. Yes.
Mic drop.
Yeah.
Isn't that fun? I love hearing you say that. Because isn't it funny that sometimes when I hear other women say that, I'm like, honey, speak louder. Yeah. But I always find that sometimes when I say it, I'm like, oh, God, it sounds so conceited.
It's very hard for me to say. Very hard. It. Like, yes.
Anyone listening, if you're listening to this, please say it more often. Yes. Because then it helps other women say that. Yeah. So I love that.
Thank you.
That is the best ever. Thank you so much for your candor your openness. It was just incredible. I know without a shadow of a doubt that there's going to be not one, there's probably going to be 100 people listening to this and saying, you know what? Maybe I can.
Yes, you can.
Maybe I can.
Yes.
And I think that's the best thing ever. Thank you so much. It's been an absolute honor to listen to you.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening. If you've enjoyed this episode, I would be oh so appreciative if you can just take a few seconds and leave a review, rate it 5 stars. Don't worry if you want to rate it 4 stars. Nah, you have better things to do, like, you know, looking at shirtless photos of Chris Hemsworth. But, you know, it really means a lot. I know it only takes a few seconds, but this is how in a sea of podcasts, you know, people like me grow. So I appreciate everything. I appreciate the time that you've dedicated today. Until next time, never forget, every day is a chance for you to shine. Thanks.